are listening to Off Planet Radio at offplanetradio.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Off Planet TV. Randy's with me, and we have a great show for you tonight, so we're going to get right into it, all right? Okay, so several months back, I heard tonight's guest on a radio show I occasionally listen to. Something about her resonated on the absolute highest level for me. Just a few weeks ago, I was reminded of this when I heard her again on another show, and tonight I'm honored to have her join us. Our guest was subject to trauma-based mind control, intentionally designed for hybridized and cloned bloodline elites. Outwardly, she was exploited as a multiple personality disorder slave by government, military, intelligence, religious, and corporate institutions. Inwardly, that exploitation was mirrored by a soul-devouring, eons-old, cross-dimensional species dedicated to hybridizing and cloning human beings. The black tech that fragmented her mind was administered by an elite bloodline network of minions and perpetrators enslaved for centuries by these malevolent beings. She has repeatedly encountered demigods, Nephilim, and Archons in the altered consciousness of trauma-based mind control programming and in full waking consciousness. Her deep programming began in April 2008 and continues to this day. She has spent the last several years speaking out about her story to both heal herself and in hopes of reaching and helping others. She has written two books entitled Our Life Beyond MK Ultra 1 and 2. More recently, she has been focusing on drawing attention to the dark technology, both physical and spiritual, that is being applied to everyone and everything and sending us into transhumanism at an ever-increasing pace. Tonight, she is going to share information about some of the black tech that she has experienced and how it is affecting all of us. Alisa E., welcome to Off Planet TV.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Randy. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. So why don't you just give us a little background, whatever you want to share about your story. And then I know you have some specific things you really want to talk about tonight. So let's get into it.
Sounds great. Okay. Well, I was born in 1962 in the Northeast of the United States and got military on both sides of, you know, paternal and maternal. There seems to be a connection there. My father was definitely a pedophile, so I'm not sure also if that played a role in some of the agencies, in other words, that maybe he was coerced into working with. I seem to have other multiple personalities in my family, my immediate family. Spent handful of years in Jersey. We moved to the Tennessee area, spent some time there, and then down to Florida. And I have memories of being involved in a variety of abuses, ritualistic in nature, as well as involving military and intelligence and actual what I call programming sessions. In several cases, different locations, but on such as military bases and so forth. In later years, I was designed to have many, many personalities, actually, many fragments. And I find that I call it high-level use. There are many high-level slaves, and the reason I use that term isn't so much about me as those who had access to my uses, people that are in rather high-level positions or they were involved in my programming and abuses. And in that setup, just real briefly, when you're a high-level total mind control slave, generally you've got a lot of things you can do. There's a lot of skills attached to various alters, characteristics, personalities. Enhanced skills in many cases, things that maybe in the everyday consciousness the average person doesn't seem to have access to. And in that, there's usually predominant uses. In other words, there's kind of different models of slaves. And my main uses seem to be sexual and kill programming. So, I went through mostly programming and some sexual use in the younger years and was being trained. And then I have a memory of at 18 kind of being turned loose, not completely, but in other words, I didn't have to have a physical handler present. I think I moved into, not that remote accessing wasn't happening prior to that, but a lot of my handling started to bounce between having a physical person present and remote handling. And attempted to get some help at certain points and wasn't able to get out. There's really no place to go. Throughout my life, memories were bleeding through, but then, you know, alter personalities would take over and they would kind of sink back down in. So it's really kind of difficult to explain. I think some of the material I bring to the table tonight might help elucidate how that process works a little bit. But they basically used to use trauma-based mind control. I still think it's all mind control is traumatic. It's just now a lot of it's done from remote locations. No-touch torture is what they term it. And in the late 80s, I was entered into the cloning program. And I'm not going to get too far into that personally tonight because it'll sidetrack probably where we're going to go. But eventually there was more than one of me, not from birth, but in the late 80s this came about. And as far as I know, that's still running, a couple of them at least. So I looked around for help, in my early 20s, went to the mental health community, and of course I was just reprogrammed. I don't think it's necessarily that way now. I think there's a lot of awareness in a lot of the mental health field, at least in pockets. It's still a caution area, but let's see. It wasn't until I was looking around for probably a good 12, 15 years trying to get help, and it wasn't until I was 46. I took a really huge risk and went and met a couple of men through a potential handler, believe it or not. He was supposed to kind of take over as a benefactor because I was waking up and lock me back down. But I started really, at that point at 46, started what I call deep deprogramming. Things have been bleeding through for a long time. And I understood that there was military involvement. I understood they were in my head, you know, that kind of thing. I understood that I was missing time and there were other parts of me that were doing things. But I didn't understand any of the concepts of mind control or even multiplicity until I met these guys and told them what was going on. And fortunately for me, they had already been aware of it and had worked with a couple other people, and one very, very significantly, and I would call her another high level. She was brought about and utilized through one of the same institutions that utilized me somewhat, which is the LDS, Latter-day Saints, Mormon Church. She was more involved with them than I was in a different way. So I was really, really fortunate. I felt like I was led to that by something much greater than myself, and began what I call deep deprogramming, which is really started for me as the acknowledgement that I was right, that I was and am what I thought, that these things weren't crazy ideas or imaginings. I even would find that a lot of my memories were extremely similar, if not almost exactly the same, as many other slaves who had gone public. You know, I'd find that out years later. So I'm still in that process, though in a very different state of mind now. I don't care to use the term integrated, but my highest self, my truest self, is in charge of everything now, and I'm not being utilized in any of those ways anymore and haven't been for some time. I don't lose time, and so forth. So that's kind of where I'm at now, and I'm very devoted to bringing attention to this and the modernization of what I call the old MKUltra that I came through in the 60s, 70s. And throughout my life, it's changed to a very technological, remotely done, and it doesn't have to start at birth.
Okay, so I just want to clarify a few things for our listeners who are, just so you know, our listeners are very savvy when it comes to mind control and such issues. That's been talked about a lot on this show, and our listeners have done lots of research on that kind of thing. So just wanted you to know that. But can you clarify for people, you're not Mormon, are you?
I'm not, no. Yeah. I was brought, from my understanding of what my alters presented to me in various downloads of their experiences, I was presented to the Mormon Church through intelligence agencies.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I got, but just I wanted to clarify that for the listeners, because I think sometimes people think that if you speak of being used by a religious institution, that it means you are part of that religious institution. So,
exactly.
Okay. So, very good. So let's just, and thank you for clarifying what deep deprogramming means to you. Let's move into, you're passionate about speaking out about how this is affecting all of us at this point, as opposed to just, you know, sharing your story and your experiences, but how your experiences are a good way to relate some of this. So I know that there is a particular topic you wanted to get into tonight that was based on an article that we will link to the article in the show notes as well. But why don't you introduce that to us, that topic to us, and take us away.
Okay, great. Well, I'm gonna go back a little bit, because I find that, you and I have talked about this a little bit. We often talk about, it's kind of common knowledge in this community that most people, not everybody, tend to agree that roughly when we talk about above ground science and tech, or what the military is working on or intelligence agencies are doing with mind control or, you know, technology and science and biotechnology in general, we generally say, based on insider information, not just a guesstimate, but we based on a lot of insider and whistleblowers, that what's shown up where we are at the above ground, meaning in the public sector or even in the private sector, but above ground, not covert, but where we are there, and then dropping down into the black-on-black esoteric technologies is what I choose to call them. We're talking about a very occultic, ritualistic science. So we're bringing in the technology and science, but we're also talking about I don't know any other words to use for it other than esoteric science. When I say black on black, I mean deep, covert, literally underground facilities, organizations, and so generally in the research community, most people will agree with 50 to 100 years ahead technologically.
Yeah,
below ground.
I agree with that too.
Okay. So let's just say we take the bottom end of that. Let's take 50 years ahead. We'll be conservative on that.
Okay.
So if we look at 1950s, 1960s, okay, let's just take 1960s around the time I was born into this. So we're talking about underground in the 1960s. We would be approximately where we are today and what they're talking about above ground.
Yeah.
Just to give some context, because I think a lot of people say and agree that it's 50 to 100 years ahead, but then when you bring in things like artificial intelligence, nanobots in the body being delivered to everyone, when you bring in cloning, when you bring in cybernetics, synthetic biology. So when we start talking about these things on a real time, like you're meeting someone, okay, who has clones, it's really difficult for people to grasp that as an actual. You know, they want to think it's possible, but to really accept it is difficult. But when you look at the timelines of what we're talking about, in 1960, that they were probably close to, if not where we are now, above ground. Where are we in 1980? Where are we in 1990? Where were they in the 2000s? So it gives some perspective to that claim of anywhere from 50 to 100 years ahead.
No, I think that it is, that's a very good point, how people can believe it when you say those numbers, but when you talk about then and apply it to now, it's a harder leap for them to get over, for sure. Yeah.
It is. And it's understandable. There's not, you know, for the average person, there's not a lot of context for those issues. But even within this community of research, I think it's time we get our feet really grounded and look at it that way, that some of the claims of whether they're, you know, legitimately deprogramming or they're being utilized in the public as the deprogramming slave, but some of the claims, they sound outlandish, but are they when you look at it that way? And I'm going to just jump back to, there's a doctor, Dr. Robert White, and this is that video you have.
Okay, I have it. Hold
and in 1963, he said the brain was taken out of the body and kept alive outside. Now, that means they obviously weren't talking to it, but they were sending signals and receiving signals. Everything was working. That was 1963, and that was above ground science, okay? And I've got a couple of quotes from him here. And the first one is, quote, "If you can do it for the animal brain, you can do it for the human brain." And of course, I'll just interject here, he was referring to, at that time, the animal, but he made many references to the work he did with very particular animals and that this would correspond with the humans. And this was back in the 60s, okay? And again, above ground 60s. Another quote, "Transplant the human thinking process. Some believe the spiritual process." And then he continued on with his experimentation, and he's most famously known, I think, for transplanting the head of a monkey from one monkey to another monkey's body, the whole entire head, including all the connections. And my understanding was that it stayed alive and functioned for 7 days. And this is what he had to, one of the things he had to say about it. "As much a monkey as they were when they were in their original body, I would be assured the monkey personality is retained. Consciousness can be transplanted. Obviously, personality. Where did this bring us as far as the human spirit or soul goes? I guess you could argue it could be transplanted." So that just gives you an idea of, in the 60s and 70s, what they were doing above ground. He was located in Ohio, as a matter of fact. With that, if you guys don't
have
any...
You want to know the clip? Okay, here we go. Here's the clip.
"One of my main research interests is whole brain emulation. We can simulate the nerve cells, the signals going on inside them, how one signal goes from one neuron to another. And that way we can learn a lot of interesting things about the brain. But what about making a simulation that encompasses all the nerve cells in the brain, all the little chemical and electric activities that are happening? That might actually become an emulation, something that is so accurate that it is the same thing. So a neural impulse in my brain, that is of course a biochemical process, but we could imagine in a computer, a piece of software, calculating that now this much energy must move to that area, those areas will have these levels of chemicals change. So all the processes in the real biological brain would have counterparts in the software. They might be very different from what's actually happening in a real brain, but they have exactly the same function. So the idea of the brain scanning would be to start with the brain, fixate it using various chemical techniques, slice it up thinly, scan each of these slices using advanced microscopy, reconstruct in a computer the three-dimensional structure where everything is and what it is, and then use various mathematical methods to turn that into a computer simulation of what would be going on in the brain. I believe that an uploaded person would actually be a person with consciousness, emotions, and we should give them human rights and treat them as real people. Suppose we have a brain emulation. We have a piece of software that does exactly the same work as a real human brain. That human brain is of course going to be a person with skills, knowledge, emotions, at least if it's successful emulation.
Suppose it was a good mathematician.
Okay, was that it? I think that was it, yeah?
Yeah, that was great. And I don't know that person's name. It's the video. I'm sure you're going to have the link there. But it was about Dr. Robert White's work, and he was elaborating into moving it into the realm of brain-computer interface. And actually, literally, uploading into a computer, which is really interesting and kind of a lead-in to the study. It's actually an article, but it's actually a study that was published in March of 2000. So if you guys want, we can go into that, or if you want to...
Yeah, no, I just want to make one comment before...
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting things said in that clip, but the part I find most interesting is that he is talking about giving human rights to these cloned or uploaded people, but
yeah,
they don't even give, they didn't give human rights to you and you're a real person.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to me, this whole, like, A, what is their concept of human rights? But it almost sounds like they think that these created beings are more important than organic beings.
Right. You're right, and I think this is that compartmentalization in society. The we talked about the no critical thinking, there's really nobody is looking at the entire scope of things. It's piecemeal. It's now we're past, supposedly we're past MKUltra and mind control, and we've moved into this is the reality of what's coming, so we're just going to deal with this without any of the implications of what mind control and transhumanism is really, really all about.
Yeah.
Oh, and the additional issue to all of this goes way beyond civil rights or human rights, because we're now delving into the soul realm as well, and I don't want to open that up as a big can of worms, but I'll kind of park it there because it may be a future discussion as well based on intel that I've gotten from a deprogrammer who's working the same type of deep deprogramming that you've undergone over many years. And the experiments, the current state of the experiments, are way beyond human cloning. They go into actually literally synthesizing and hybridizing on the soul spiritual level. So, maybe somebody can talk that. Does that jive with what you know too?
Absolutely, absolutely. And really all I'm doing today is attempting to give context for what is happening now. And you're absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, the study that I'm going to go over in part is about this was occurring according to this study. Now, this doesn't mean this is when this happened. This is one of the few studies out there on mind control. And they are talking about the soul spiritual aspect of what they're doing. And this was from the mid-90s, okay? And I'm finding that it's important to give that context, because when you just come into what's going on now, it becomes unbelievable to people. It can't be even be absorbed. And you're absolutely right. I personally think that cloning is still going on, but in another respect, I think it's obsolete.
Yeah.
And I mean, think about that. That's like, what? We're just now in the public and private sector up top talking about, really, I mean, really significantly starting to talk about cloning. And we're always behind up top, you know, and yeah. How do we catch up to where it is? And we've got to give context to what's been going on. So, no, I absolutely agree with you. And one of the claims I have made in the book is that the synthetic beings have been among us for some time.
Yeah.
I know of, and I won't name the person, but I'm absolutely certain. I've been following someone who went public for years, and there's no soul there. This person has fooled a lot of people.
Yeah.
And has quite a you know, a lot of people watching and presenting. And I, the first time I saw her, I heard AI. There's no soul. This is a complete AI-run person or being. Looks human, acts human, has the emotions, but I heard it. And I had already, in my mind, had already talked about that they were already out here, that I have met people who are not, there's no soul, there's nothing going on, there's no human spirit there.
Well, you actually can go into the entertainment industry, and if you're an astute observer of current pop trends and movie films, you're going to be able to start to process that some of these entities are in front of our eyes right now in pop culture and mainstream film culture. So, you know, that's yeah. not a stretch for me. I know it is for a lot of people. I don't think it is for the listeners of this show, though.
Right, right. And what I'm talking about isn't in Hollywood. It's in this community.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
I'm just some people that are coming forward as whatever, whistleblowers, whatever. This one happens to be, you know, is claiming to be a mind control victim, has come forward, and there's nobody home. There's nobody there. So it's not, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I absolutely agree, but it's under our noses in ways that I don't think a lot of people are noticing. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are very aware of a lot of the information I'm going to bring forward tonight. But this article, the reason I wanted to bring it forward is because I don't think it's gotten any publicity whatsoever. If it has, I'm completely unaware of it. And to me, in the timeline that it was presented, it's unprecedented. Because it's talking about technologies, to me, that have been in use for decades, but even in this community may not be recognized that this could be being done across the board. You know, not just with someone who was born into and raised in this community. So,
okay, so why don't you introduce this article and go into it for us?
Great. It's entitled Mind Control Using Holography and Dissociation, a Process Model. And it's by two doctors named Gillen. And then subject is Deva Paul. And this study was done in the 90s, mid-90s. And then they, I guess, published this article in March of 2000. And I'm going to try to just take pieces, and I tried to cut it down as much as I can. But if you can, bear with me, because where it's going to go is important, and I would like to talk about personal experience with what is happening here. And I'll just preface with, this article came to me based on my personal experience. I was reluctant to share it because I was quite a ways into deep deprogramming when I was having conscious awareness of something occurring at night. And I finally confided in a friend who has also spent many years in researching mind control and a lot of issues related to it. She's a writer, and she sent me this in response to what I shared with her, and it explained it. And again, this is one of the few studies I'm aware of that was done in the mid-90s related to mind control. And it was done in Australia, and it's related to the Pine Gap area. And so I'll just try to be as concise as I can. I'll just pull some excerpts from here, but again, just give some background. Tertiary dissociation, as described by Vanderkolk, McFarland, and Weisbach, which is 1996, occurs when people develop distinct ego states that contain the traumatic experience consisting of complete identities with distinct cognitive, affective, and behavioral patterns. The traumatic memories for individuals who dissociate do so not because of active repression, but rather because their mental capacities are weakened by vehement emotions, which impair their ability to integrate mental contents. The traumatized or abused individual is incapable of integrating the memory of the trauma into personal consciousness. So that just gives you an idea what trauma-based mind control is about. This is done in the extreme for that purpose, and it's usually intentional. That's what it's for. They're deliberate and are shown to evolve over time in both intensity and technical sophistication. Gillen and Paul, 1997, have chronicled the evolution of such abuse practices by an organization committed to using dissociation as a primary instrument to achieve control of individuals behaving in a robotic manner. They show that the direct relationship between the use of traumatic physical abuse and abuse administered through experimental and scientific research and advanced technological applications to create dissociated personalities and interconnect these fragments of the person to respond to triggers and program signals. Memory for the detail of this induced trauma appears to be boundless, and that comes from Ross in 1996. So we're just kind of setting the stage of what they were doing with her. So moving along, skipping down in the article, it says, based on extensive case study research, Gillen et al., 1997, have identified the presence of large levels of electromagnetic energy around the controlled subject and some circumstantial evidence to argue that direct behavioral control of the dissociated person is through an implanted chip. Okay, so they're getting into the idea of a chip, which today and for some time is not necessary due to nanotechnology. But later on in this, it gets into Jose Delgado, and if, like you said, I'm sure everybody knows the name, MKUltra superstar, he was putting in chips and controlling behavior in the 1950s. Okay, so we're way past that. In the research referred to above, there is a direct connection between the ability to influence conscious behavior and the control of the brain mechanisms to produce such behavior. It is thus important to consider how memory, sight, and hearing function, as these appear to be associated with the capacity to achieve mind control in human being. They impact directly on our understanding of reality. And this is all pertaining not just to the individual. This is going to build to what is going on, because so many people ask me, well, why would they be doing this across the board? Okay, so we're talking here about our perception of reality. So the study is part of an ongoing research project that tracks the healing and integration of dissociated fragments to achieve wholeness in the dissociator, as well as examine indications of mind control techniques. The research was, I'm not going to get into all that because they're talking about the different stages of the research and so forth. So a description of the case. We're talking about this particular woman. We'll give just a little bit of background because, bottom line, there are still a lot of individual subjects out there. A detailed description is provided of how Deva was fragmented or dissociated from Denise, who was born in the north of England of parents committed to the involvement in occult practices. In 1964, this duo system migrated with their parents to South Australia. Denise commenced therapy with one of the authors of this paper in April of 94 after a referral from a Christian doctor who suspected dissociation. Some 314 altar fragments were identified. All but three were fused into Denise by November of 1997. In August of 1996, after an incident of severe physical abuse to Denise that was both dysfunctional and emotional, Deva surfaced, confronted the therapist for the first time, and offered to work with her. Deva, in effect, defected from the organization known as the Global Technological World Alliance, which is GTWA, by September of 96, there was clear evidence of medical R&D and organizational abuse in DEVA and a high probability of physical interference. All 667 altar fragments were fused back into DEVA by August of 1997. In the follow-up interviews of each nightly events associated with current level of abuse, DEVA reported that she perceived herself present within the Defense Research Facility in a manifested form that could hear, see, feel, and move about. In this total situation, she was confronted by abuse coordinators who were known to her from her previous attachment to the organization. She actually had worked for them for 36 years. From this cycle of abuse, dissociation, and control, DEVA was subjected to the appearance of many of her associates with whom she had worked in the laboratories in strategic planning sessions and on specific research projects. A number from both Australia and overseas had been her mentors during her training activity at the GTWA. So what were, well, I'll just go on. DEVA reported that she was subjected to a technical process in which recorded information on an abused person, meaning another person, or fragments with the means to control her actions or behavior could be downloaded into DEVA's mind. Such information does result in DEVA experiencing much pain and suffering in her physical body during fusion of these parts into herself. Subsequently to the nightly activities referred to above, it was necessary to cleanse her of these foreign parts. So in other words, and this is going to come up as we move into the case findings, well, I'll just let it come up in the court, due course. So we're now at the case discussion and findings. Within a 5-kilometer radius of DEVA's home, DEVA is observed to respond to some unseen and outside force. This force exhibits itself initially by a sudden movement of the head, severe pain in the head, and general convulsive body movements. Such behavior occurs regularly in the home, when shopping, in the car, in church, and even in the theater. And at home, these effects occur regularly, consistently, and in all respects in a reproducible way. In the extreme, DEVA can be bolted out of her chair to collapse on the floor and in many cases be knocked unconscious. And then a number of visitors to her home have said that when they enter her place, it is, quote, like pushing through a wall, end quote. So they started to use this particular oscilloscope that had a range of 0 to 50 megahertz. And what they found was in the lounge room, it was 13 times. In the bedroom, it was 52 times recorded, and in 70 times close to DEVA's head as compared to the central reading in the laboratory, which was only 2 times. So we've established that we've got a person who's receiving from afar, but we're talking about something where it's not just her. She's being bilocated, okay? She's got people who are watching her in her home. She goes into trance or unconscious and goes to a facility, and they're reading the electromagnetic energies and so forth in the home with this oscilloscope. And here's what it says. During periods of intense interference and bolting, DEVA reports the presence of burning sensations in her body, extensive perspiration and the formation of tiny blisters on the extremities. Of specific relevance is that Cometa, quoted in Andrews 1993, states that Pine Gap is not only a space research facility, but is also, quote, used to study electromagnetic propulsion, or EMP, end quote. This research is conducted completely underground. He also claims there is an installed underground antenna that can be used to generate a gigantic standing wave around the Earth, which is the basis for a new type of transceiver. Okay. Yeah. Again, this is above ground, mid-90s, only study that I know of. And
can
then
I,
the finding
I
one...
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Eliza,
please,
can
please,
I
please
ask
do.
You a question here at this point? Can you define for us, within the context of the article you just read, bilocation? What does that mean exactly?
Well, I don't know the traditional meaning of it, but what's going to come about in some of these findings here, okay, that I've experienced is that You've got the old MKUltra, which is you're supposedly falling asleep in bed. You hit certain brain waves. They remotely tap you. And this is even old stuff for me, okay?
Yes.
They can remotely handle me. I get up, okay, put my shoes on, walk out the door, car picks me up, off we go, okay? I have hundreds of memory fragments of this, okay, over the years. And during the course of my use, I began to notice that, that shifted into nobody needed to come get me. I just went and did it myself. And that was the remote handling. I got in the car. I drove where I needed to go. I switched altars sometimes when I was in a room into another altar. What happened later as I began to deprogram, there were a couple of memories that didn't fit that scenario, by the way, from years ago. What happened later as I began to deprogram and what happened a few years ago in a conscious state is what I'm getting to in this article. And I'm sorry if this is really baseline.
That's okay.
You guys are probably way beyond this, but you're going to see that
This isn't about us anyway. We want the listeners to hear this. You're presenting a case here. So
good question on bilocation. The official definition, I don't know, but in my opinion, we've got a whole nother type of bilocation going on.
So just real quickly, I just want to mention.
Go ahead.
When she said bilocation, of course, what popped up for me is Walter Bowert's book, Operation Mind Control. And when he spoke of being, basically put onto some sort of 30-day acid trip in which he was bilocating, meaning he was in more than one place at one time.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
He's mentioned in here too, his book and his work and his history. And I really do recommend, I'm kind of trashing this article because I want us to be able to discuss things and talk, all of us talk about it and also share some personal experience. But I really recommend that you're going to provide the link that people download this article and read it cover to cover. There's diagrams. And this, just to give it context of, it's really, what they're talking about here, really, and I haven't really gotten to it, but I'm going to. So she had these abilities to hear above the normal hearing range. She would, a couple of times, she was being accessed, obviously, remotely. They said they would witness, either a silent sound would trigger her because she would just switch altars, or occasionally someone would hear a bit of something, and then she would switch parts. They're finding, too, I'm not going to read all of this, but it gets into they're triggering her from afar, and they're basing it on implants. And, we know with the technology, the nanotech, when people are talking about implants, of any significant size, to me that's it's old tech. I mean, it's just old tech, and I'm not taking away from the fact that they work because they do, and they're probably always going to be around. They're starting to bring it into the public sector where you can choose implants. Well, that's a distraction from the fact that they're already in you. Okay. So the next part of the article deals with their findings related to the implant, but what I want to get to is finding number 4 and onward, and that is the mind and a spirit soul can be accessed holographically and relocated or transported to a fixed facility electromagnetically. This is what I termed to my friend PULLS, P-U-L-L-S, where my body is in bed, but I am on the other end, not astrally. And this, I want to state that emphatically because this was something I knew. I didn't understand how they were doing it at the time I stated this, but I said, I'm not talking about an astral projection. And what I would later come to find is I personally believe it's what I call etheric body hacking. And what it says here is, sorry, I just don't want to go over anything that's based on individual reports by Deva and internal parts, Denzel, Suggestion, and Gentry, total agreement is found over each part being fully conscious after access and transfer to the technological facility. Indeed, recognition of the full processes of the brain, senses, and body responses are identical to those experienced when present in the physical body. Deutsch, 1997, describes a theoretical treatment of a virtual reality machine in which the I can enter the universe of her alter ego at a different location and interact with each other. Such parallel universes do not have hidden serial numbers. They are distinguished only by what happens to them. Therefore, in rendering all this for the benefit of me, the virtual reality generator must recreate for me the effect of existing as two identical copies who then become different and have different experiences. To achieve this, the virtual reality generator must have the ability to render time travel accurately and depends on it having detailed information about the user's state of mind. If the above is true, then controllers and operators at the technical facility interact with the holographic reform as if they were interfacing with the physical body. Deva has asserted since 1996 that the GTWA conduct research at advanced technical facilities into accessing the mind of a subject from a distance. She also claims they are researching techniques for physical teleportation. Finding number 5, access brainwaves can be reformed holographically at a distant facility. It has long been recognized that dissociation or fragmentation occurs as a result of traumatic abuse by persons outside the core personality due to the amnesic or partially amnesic walls, which block the memory of trauma for an indefinite number of years. An adult may grow from childhood having numerous dissociative fragments. So the corollary associated with finding 5, or the reforming of a part holographically at a distant facility, opens the way for the holographic reform to be re-traumatized through the senses. Indeed, Deva, Denzel, Suggestion, and Dentry report in graphic detail the events witnessed at the distant facility and experience the same dissociative responses as occurred when previously fragmented from age 3 to 36 years old. In other words, it's not necessary to have a physical body present in order to achieve dissociation. The consideration of the processes of dissociation associated with the period reported in this study are based on the creation of 231 trauma and technological-based fragments in Deva. So in other words,
they're traumatizing the hologram.
They're traumatizing a hologram, but when we think of a hologram, again, context right here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to bring my personal experience into this at this point. I mean, I could go on, and it's just a fabulous article and really gives a lot of detail on what's going on with her and what's being reported back and what they're witnessing. But we're talking about, first of all, you know, we're all talking about remote, right? We're all talking about nowadays MKUltra is done remotely. And they do talk about the use of radar stations and satellites and the whole bit, okay, in this process model that they're discussing here. So they're giving a basis for what we're saying is remote mind control. You can tap in, you can map out, and you can do it. But what we're talking about here is what I experienced. And now I'm engaging with some other people who think this may or may have happened to them. It was between 2 and 3 years ago. I was well into deep programming,
You're hearing that? I'm having some.
We're getting really wild interference right now.
Yeah, you're over the target, Elisa, because we're getting something crazy coming through. So
yeah.
Okay.
All right. No, you're great. Keep going.
Let me know. Interrupt me if you can't hear what's going on here.
No, so. We're good now. We're good. The signal's cleared.
So I was having, I've been having stuff happen at night that's somewhat different and to my conscious mind than the old stuff that I went through. I noticed that from the period of when I lay down, fully conscious, eyes are closed, I'm in the dark, but I'm fully awake, things begin to happen as I progress in dropping into certain brain waves, okay? And what I've noticed is during this time, prior to this event happening consciously, And I would discover that this was going on in the past during my heavy use years as well, and when I was trying to find help. I would begin to vibrate when I hit a certain point. And I started to associate, I wasn't sure if it was because I was reclining, and then I thought, no, it's not because I'm reclining, because it doesn't always happen. During the day, I can recline, and it doesn't happen. It's when I'm hitting a certain brainwave. I don't know what that brainwave is. Something gets triggered off, and I feel a sensation in my head. And then I became aware of this, and this was happening over a period of several months and more, basically every night. And it was uncomfortable. It was difficult to sleep or rest. But this one particular night, this happened. Obviously, I eventually drifted off and went into what I would call not a lucid dream, but the next morning would recognize that I had been somewhere without leaving the bed. I knew I had not sat up, turned around, put my shoes on, and walked out the door. I knew that my body had laid there all night. But I had gone, not astrally. I was very, very clear on this. I had physically, in some form, been somewhere else in a facility. It was very clear. I was told it was an underground facility. They gave a representation, an attempt at a representation of my mother, which I was in an altered state in this facility, and I knew it wasn't my mother, but the gist of it, I won't go into all the details, was that I would never get out, that I would never get away, that I would always be brought back and stay in lockdown. And when I came out of, I won't even call it sleep, I won't even call it waking up, but when I came to in the morning, physically, I was changed. Mentally, I was changed. Emotionally, I was changed. And it really hit me spiritually. It was so palpable and real and physical that I knew I was dealing with something very different. And it affected me. It affected how I was in the world for weeks and months to come. It was going, at that time, I was aware that it was happening roughly once every month, maybe a month and a half, that I was cognizant of. The symptoms leading into it were happening regularly. So I wonder if there's periods where I'm not retaining the experience or wasn't at that time. I'm not aware of this continuing to happen in the last couple of years. I diligently moved right into it. And when I received this material, I started processing personally. It was really difficult because I had considered myself free of this. You know, not free as in I don't have anything to worry about, but not being accessed and definitely not going to facilities anymore. And what I knew from this was taking it from that night back to a memory from 2008 when I went to a conference looking for help covertly. I worked at the conference. It was a long conference. The first night I got there, it was not actually the conference. I was there to help set up. That night, same thing, a pull had happened. And I could never figure out how the next morning I had been taken to this facility. But I was, again, taken to a facility. It was like a dorm room. There was 20 to 30 kids, roughly, maybe 25, all blonde, blue-eyed, about 5-6 years old. And in this room, there were a bunch of twin beds all around the room, and I was led in by a woman, and there were about 5 women in there to care for the kids, but they were all victims. The women and the children were all victims. Everybody was silent. No one was talking. Everybody was waiting for whatever was going to happen, and I'm introduced to the room. I won't go into detail because there's some things I like to keep out of the public sector just to kind of see where other people are going of what happened. But I was used in that room. Something was done to me, very bizarre, to traumatize all of the kids and the women. And that next morning in the motel room, I couldn't figure out, but I knew it was the same type of thing. Years later, I would realize it was the same type of thing where I was actually there.
So let me ask a question real fast. So at the time that this happened, were you thinking that you actually physically went somewhere? And then when you this material
came, that's the only thing in 2008, it's the only thing I could figure that could have happened, but I couldn't figure out how.
Okay.
Because I woke up during the night, the darkness, and didn't seem like there was enough time
right
for me to have gotten up, got dressed, gone down and figured out wherever this facility was. It was clearly, and there was light in the room, and again, I knew I was underground in this episode, but the point I want to bring into that experience, as well as the one that would happen just 2 to 3 years ago, is that when I entered that room, okay, in that, I never looked at my body, okay? I don't recall looking at my body. I remember walking in the room, and all the children and women were silent. They were all very frightened, and frightened of me.
Huh.
And I remember afterwards trying to figure out why were I was a victim too, is the way I was seeing it. Why were they afraid of me? And of course, I wasn't shackled or forced. I walked in behind this woman. She told me to pick a bed, and you know, they would get back with me. Now, I didn't know what was going to happen either, and I knew there was going to be something as far as programming for all of us, like the rest of them. But they were looking at me with fear. And after discovering years later this article and my pulse from, you know, more recent years, I'm wondering, what did I look like?
Yeah, I was going to say, what did they present you as? Like, it was your mind or consciousness, but maybe in some other kind of body.
I am in a physical form. This is what I refer to as pulse, is a physical form while your body is still sleeping or resting or whatever state they had me in. I imagine in a very particular brainwave pattern, but I'm breathing, I'm functioning. But in this article, they talk about Deva, they're attaching electrodes to her.
Right.
Hologram on the other end.
Huh, yeah.
Okay, so we're talking, and this is kind of what I want to bring in. This is a study that's being done in the mid-90s. That doesn't mean that's when it started. That's when the study was being done by these doctors who were studying Deva. Okay, so in the mid-1990s, they're already pulling people into facilities long distance, and there's a physical on the other end, some form that is, so these people were seeing me. It's the same thing as a couple of years ago. I was interacting with people. I was in a physical form. So in other words, we're not talking about a lab situation where everybody in the room is part of the system and you may or may not be in physical form. They just know you're there. We're talking about a physical form on the other end.
And what did that look like?
What does that look like? Are you the replication? Because I don't know if you've seen some holograms and where holographic technology is, but we wouldn't know.
Right.
They're so advanced that, I mean, could it walk by you on the street and you wouldn't even know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't know. So in these situations, we're talking about physicality that can act as the original person enough to, in her case and in my case, to be re-traumatized. She's coming back with, you know, numerous alters every night, and they're reintegrating, fusing them back in, and then the next night she gets taken again. She's being traumatized again in this holographic form. And the other element to this is fascinating to me is that it's not just her. They're traumatizing other people in front of her that she's somehow connected to. They're downloading the experience, the emotions, everything, the sensations, physical sensations, the emotions, to a computer. And then that is later or at some point selectively uploaded downloaded into her.
Yeah.
So she's having to reintegrate traumatization that isn't even happening to her.
Yeah.
It's someone else's traumatized memories, but we're talking all of it, physical and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, when I read you sent me the article a few days ago and I read it and I fully got exactly what they were implying. And it is, it definitely gives one a moment, a pause to think about things for a bit.
Right, right. And then if we go back to the 50 to 100 years ahead.
Right. Where are we now?
Is it really that difficult? I mean, are we even catching up with synthetic biology? What is going on?
Randy, want to say something?
Yeah, let me pose a question here. In this transaction where you are in one place, your consciousness, your beingness, whatever is that's transferred, are the receptors on the other side, your physical body, evidencing any of the, let's just say physical stressors, metabolic rate increases, or physical injuries that would be the result of being in that other location? Is there a transaction physically that comes back to the subject's physical?
Okay. To me in the morning, yes, that was part of it. That was part of not only all the sensations and how I woke up, but that was part of what I knew was why it was so physical. And in the experience in 2008, when I went to this conference and that what happened that night, something was put on me, on my head, and I was interacting with it. I went into a fear state, and I was hitting it. I was moving my hands. I was very aware of seeing it and feeling it on my head. When my hands would hit it, I would feel it. This was all extremely palpable. What's the word? It starts with a T.
Tactile.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was, and I know that, you know, there's a lot of things you can do just zooming into the brain, but it was really evident to me that this was a different type. There's many different levels of being able to be traumatized, but that this was different. And it wasn't the first time. It was the first time that while it happened and when I woke up or came into the next morning, I was consciously aware of it. And even in the place, even though they had put me in an alter personality for programming, it was slipping in the whole time because I knew there was something wrong. I knew this was not right. There was something going on.
You had also at this point begun, this is before your deep deprogramming, but you had begun the process of trying to deprogram yourself. So your awareness at a level harder to pull this kind of thing. I'm sorry. So you're aware when you have, once you have a certain level of awareness, I think it becomes increasingly difficult for these things to be pulled off without you having some crossover where you are consciously experiencing. The other thing I just have to bring up at this point, is that it's interesting to me that this happened to you at a conference, because to me, that seems like ripe ground to experiment with new kinds of technologies on people who oftentimes people who attend these things, they'll be staying in the same hotel, a lot of them are obviously already traumatized, and then there's others there who maybe haven't been traumatized, but are open-minded to this whole weird world, and to them, they could almost be experimented on, and they might like it. Which sounds gross, but I think that some of these people who, you know, sort of gawkers who go to some of these conferences just marvel at the stories being shared or whatever.
You just verbalized what I've basically been. Actually, I did a radio show yesterday in Ireland, and I talked about this. I'm calling these harvesting opportunities. They have people together. And, you know, we're going to have to be more explicit about this because there's a lot of people that are in a trap right now within the alternative media. So, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a great point, Emily. It looks like we're about at hour break time. I don't know if we can break gracefully at this point, or Eliza, if there's something you want to, there's no rush, there's no hurry. We can come back and revisit this. But if there's something else you want to kind of slide in here before we take the break.
No, I think that's perfect. This is a great point, and I think I've covered everything in that study that I wanted to bring it into the personal realm, and I'd love for, you know, input, and let's talk about it.
Okay. I know Emily's got a cue here, so.
Yeah, we can pick up on the other side with what we were just talking about. But as we go to break, Elisa has created, while she was in her deep deprogramming, some incredible, incredible collages that helped her find the different parts of herself and express herself and help for heal. And they're amazing, but I do warn you, they're very intense. And think I've picked some appropriate music to accompany them. The track is called Alterism by the artist Alter Ego.
Yeah, and I will just point out again, for people who are experiencing triggering problems, these are very triggering. You may want to just turn the video off at this point.
Okay, we'll be back in a few minutes.
Back on the other side. Welcome back to the second half of Off Planet TV. I guess sometimes even I can be kind of gobsmacked by what comes out on these programs, and certainly this tonight is no exception. I think where we left things on the other side, we're going to pick up a little bit on, because there was a real important piece of information there that a lot of you need to hear. What is going to happen here is that we are now bumping up on August, and we've kind of talked about this referentially for a couple of months. We're going to take a break from the show and producing this show, the Off Planet TV show, and the joint broadcast podcast that Emily and I do. We're going to reformat. We have a new platform that we want to launch, and then we'll come back. The best way for you to find out what we're doing and to stay in touch is the website, which is offplanetradio.com, because the announcements will go out there. We'll put them out on the YouTube channel as well. At this time, I don't have any formal announcements to make about it, other than we're going to take August off and refresh ourselves, and we're going to we're going to pick up where we left off. Hey, Emily, take us back into the conversation. And
I'll get it. So before we pick up where we left off, I just also wanted to give Elisa a brief chance to speak about her books and tell it and where people can see her work. And that
great. I have a blog site, and it's www.ourlifebeyondmkultra.wordpress.com. And the books can be linked from there. They're actually on Amazon.com, book one and two, same title, Our Life Beyond MKUltra. But the blog site, I would like to direct people there, because when you go to the homepage, there's a resource recommended reading section. And I really encourage people to go to that and look around, because there's tons of links and a lot of free information there, a lot of which I'm sad to say is disappearing. A lot of the videos I've posted are gone and articles are gone, but there's still tons left, and it's a great combination, not just about MKUltra, not at all. It's about so many things related. This is a huge octopus, many tentacles, and take a look. And the books are in print-on-demand or ebook format.
Okay, interestingly, as you're announcing these, we're getting some more funny interference. But I also just want to let people know, I really hope people will take a look at her books, buy them, preferably in hard copy, but on the e-reader. I've been reading, I've almost finished with the second one, and they are incredible. Like the collage is very intense, so do so with caution, but I highly encourage everyone, but especially those of you who are struggling with issues like with yourself, that to read them. And you know, I think there's definitely some things in there that may help you to recover some parts of yourself. So I encourage everyone to do that. Okay, so
that, and you know, I just want to quickly add in there that there are symptoms too. You should go forward with caution. There will be, if you're an MKUltra survivor or you know, mind control survivor, you will be triggered. There's no way you around it.
Yep.
But take it slow. Have a good support person. But that's part of the deal. This is put in a way that's how it comes up when you start moving towards the truth. So be gentle and patient with yourself. Take really good care of yourself. But if you have reactions, that's part of it. There's no easy way through deprogramming.
No, and yeah, so everything she said, yes. okay, so let's pick up where we left off, and that was this idea that all of these conferences, whether they be UFO conferences, chemtrail conferences, conspiracy conferences, super soldier conferences, which that idea just sickens me. When I heard about that, it sounded almost like a world tour of celebrity super. It sickens me, because it is so far from the truth of what the experience is that it's just gross. But you know, there are people who, your point, Elisa, is that a lot of people go to these looking for help, and because they're desperate for help or looking for answers, there are also people that go to sort of voyeurs you know, or just because they're dazzled with this or they're addicted to information that scares them. But
And I'll say this as well. There's a lot of agents, and I've said this on the show before.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I stopped going to conferences is because of the spooks in the background at these things. And, you know, when you're
when the antenna goes up
and you're going, boy, that really doesn't look good at all. Trust your instincts on that, because I found out my instincts were right, and I found out that, you know, the level of harvesting that's going on there, profiling, locating people, and basically being able to work a crowd energetically in a way that is like a ripple effect for mind control, is that's all present in the background of that if you can feel it energetically.
Well, whipping people up into this state where they're creating loosh
for all sorts of
yeah. malevolent entities that also yeah. are surrounding these conferences. So let's start there, Ali. So what do you think?
Well said. Well said. And I even believe in my case that I was programmed at when certain things started to go off to go there. Because when I look at, you know, it's not just the programming is put in layers, the deprogramming comes out or up in a very scheduled format. And it doesn't mean you can't break through it, but they designed how you're going to wake up if you start to wake up. So that was really quite a lesson for me. After many months in deep deprogramming, I began, because I recorded everything. I highly recommend recording everything that's going on with you. Don't censor anything. Just write it down or say it into a recorder. Don't censor it now. It will make sense later. And these are patterns. And for me, it was to go to these UFO conferences. And I had some history in MUFON and even in a UFO abductee support group years prior. So I had that baseline already set in. And the way my memory surfaced was the incest and sexual abuse first. This is a real general overview. It wasn't exactly, you know, 1, 2, 3, but basically the incest and sexual abuse, followed by alien abduction or interaction, followed by military da-da-da-da-da. So it was layered to come up if it was going to break, which it usually does in the old trauma-based mind control. You hit a certain age or certain age range and it starts to come up. So it was set that way. So, you know, I have a lot of compassion for the people that are going as a victim who went covertly, very quietly, terrified. All my alters or several of them screaming, don't go, you're outing us, literally. Do not go to this conference, you're outing us. I didn't even know what they meant. And so I think a lot of people are programmed to go, maybe not so much anymore, I don't know, but why not? They can do that remotely. But also, there's not a lot of places to go. I had nowhere to go. It was the closest thing, even though I knew it didn't, I couldn't talk about the military and intelligence agencies. When I went years ago, in the 90s, I mean, it was taboo. It was taboo. I mean, you go to a MUFON meeting and start talking about military abduction. You didn't do that back then. You got closed down, shut out. And now it's, you know, totally super soldier, which to me, the whole super soldier movement, not that there aren't real victims in there, okay? But the super soldier thing was, it is a psyop. The entire thing, to me, was an intelligence operation and still is.
I agree 100%.
That wasn't people, good people, trying to get it together. That was set up as an intelligence operation. And I know, have some information about some of the people that were involved in producing it originally. I know people who know them or have, you know them well, and that was definitely a setup from the word go. I don't think that everybody who's doing these things knows that. You know, when you get back to the ratio, and forgive me if I'm talking too much, but
look
at this, you know, like 95, in my opinion, 95, 98% of the people who work for them don't know they work for them. You're lucky if 2% they're actually working for the other side. Most people don't know they're working for them.
It's compartmentalization at that level, too.
Yes. Yes.
So Randy,
go ahead.
Randy, so Randy has had some run-ins, clashes with probably some of these same people that you speak of. And yeah, I think we're all in agreement with what you're saying here.
Yeah.
So it's tricky. It's tricky for a mind control survivor to find help without being, I mean, where do you go? Do you go to the police? I don't. They're my handlers. You know, I mean, do you go, where do you go? Do you go to the mental health? Whoa, that's scary. I've been reprogrammed once, and the second one was completely ignored and told to meditate more. Seriously. And, you know, it's like, I want to say that that's not the way. There is a network of mental health professionals who know what's going on. People started showing up, and they are trying to help people. But again, it's not as easy as you think. We're programmed to know that any authority is dangerous, you know, and you try to tell your family, if you got a family that's, you know, bless their hearts, messed up, they're not going to listen to you. You try to tell your friends, they have no context for this. So a lot of people, like I was telling Emily, you know, I was ready to die. I knew I was going to die any day. And so when I went, I knew it was dangerous, but I didn't have any other options. And I was strong enough to do it. So
yeah, it is interesting, whether you're talking about your own experiences or even some of these things that researchers just look into, or topics that, you know, you're looking at. It's hard to talk about them. Just those things, it's hard to talk about with people. You know, like for me, I was fortunate in that I had some interesting people around me that I don't know even whether they believed some of the things I was saying or not, but they were open-minded and intelligent enough to at least listen and engage in conversation with me. And that helped me to be able to sort of figure out how to talk about it. So that then when I wanted to talk about it to some in a more serious way than some other people, I at least wasn't like trying to spit it out for the first time. But
yeah.
Within that way that I did it, there was a lot of danger there too, you know? So it is difficult. It is.
Well, I'll just real quick give a quick summary. But in 2008, the conference I went to was also UFO conference based. It was big, huge organization. And I want to say just real quick, my opinion is that MUFON, which wasn't very well funded years ago, has been repackaged into what I would call exopolitics.
Well, of course it has. Not only
and it
that.
Money, right. Huge money behind it. Where is all that money coming from?
Hangar 51 TV series, not to mention the fact that the whole scandal that erupted early in the 2000s over the wholesale sales of abductee databases by MUFON, and specifically to Robert Bigelow and Chris, who is also a co-host on this show with me on a podcast, and I talked about this. About the integrity breach that happened with MUFON. MUFON couldn't have botched handling abductions and abductees worse if they had been paid to do it, or
and
oops,
they were.
Were they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a setup.
Yeah. I didn't know about any of that, but when I saw the you know, I know someone who was asked to speak in Europe, exopolitics. Paid the whole way. And I just looked at this person and said, where do you think they're getting all this money? This is not how it works. I mean, they're going to pay everything for you to fly over to, you know, and I mean, this was someone who, great guy, but nobody even knew who he was, you know? I mean, this was, and it has all the earmarks. It's glitzier, it's shinier, and it has a lot of money. And, yeah, that to me is just like, okay, I can't conclude. I can't conclude. I don't have any evidence of that. But my gut instinct told me years ago, watch out for this one. This one's going to get big.
Now, Eliza, you've kind of worked from premises as you've gone along and in unraveling your own inner self, unraveling your own history. And part of that seems to be connected to UFOs and alien abductions. And there's two points to what I want to go into. First off, since you published this in your book, I'm comfortable asking you what the connection is with David Jacobs from Temple University, because I interviewed him just a couple of weeks ago. When there's this like wild synchronicities flying through the show all the time, and this is one of them, essentially on the subject of hybrids. But you mentioned him in the book. Can you tell us the connection there and how that worked and what you can say about that?
Sure. I never met him, but I was in the, get my timeline here, I think it was in the mid-90s, wound up at MUFON through a series of bizarre events, which involved Bud Hopkins Foundation.
Right.
The Intruder Foundation, through a series of events, wound up at a hypnotist in Florida who, from another town, 2 hours away, wound up introducing me in my town to a woman who went to MUFON who had gone to David Jacobs for her own abduction experiences, and she wound up unwittingly, I believe, as a victim, reprogramming me. She was running the support group in that town for abductees in her home.
Well, you say unwittingly.
She was a victim.
Okay. But she was a victim of mind control projects.
Yes. Okay. And much older than I was. And I actually wrote about this in the book. I think that she and I had interaction when I was younger as well. Yeah. In Alter. So I didn't know her when I met her in the 90s. My front person didn't know who she was. But she had worked extensively with Jacobs on her abduction experiences.
So can I just say real fast,
please.
One of the things that I found that I wasn't involved in the interview Randy did with David Jacobs. I found it incredibly synchronistic when I started reading your book, and that came up on almost the very first page. I thought, wow, this is interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting too, actually.
One of the things that Randy said to me, and I hope you don't want me saying this, Randy, is that David Jacobs says he doesn't believe in government conspiracy or my labs.
No, he was very distinct about that. He didn't say that on air. I'm freely offering this because it just came up off air when he said to me, I don't believe in government cover-ups and conspiracies. And, you know, I just went, whoa, which is kind of a disconnect given the machinations that are going on in the background, which gave me a little bit of concern. And then looking into the background of his work, which... It's very difficult in this field to find anybody that's squeaky clean, immaculate evidence, the whole thing. We really do work from a data set that at any given time could just collapse in on itself. So I'm okay with that. I wasn't going after Professor Jacobs specifically, but I posted something on my Facebook page and I said, I want to get clarification on this. There's a lot of stories out there. There's a lot of rumors. You know, from our end, we try to keep the signal noise ratio rather low so that if we put something out that's damaging or false, we go on record and basically clarify things. So that was part of it. And if I can go to the second part of what I wanted to frame here.
Well, can I make one more
comment,
which is really interesting about this person, and I won't name. She has since passed away, but I still don't want to name her. But she was in New Jersey working for Siemens years ago.
So, telephones?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Siemens.
The military contractor, German military contractor.
They're a telecom company, but they
telecom,
do a lot
that's
of
stuff. What I meant. Yeah, telecom.
So in my opinion, her, she had a long history, and it continued while she worked at Siemens for, I think, a very long time, a couple of decades. And so, you know, that military contractor connection is even in there. And she had quite a story herself, and worked extensively with Jacobs before I met her. That's all I know. I don't trust him, so I don't trust any of them,
okay,
to tell you the truth.
That's a fair comment, and I appreciate that, because that goes onto the record, and we clarify it. The second part of this, I'll try and unpack this, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but given what you're putting out and the fact that you were attending UFO conferences and you speak about ETs, aliens, and hybrids in your book. What are we to make of that whole juggernaut in relationship to the Black Ops projects? Because we have my labs on one hand, then there's this whole blurry, fuzzy thing that happens that seems to go between the edges of MK Ultra type projects, my labs, and then what some people consider to be, quote, pure abductees, pure contact experiences. Is there a distinction here, or are we really looking at one thing?
Okay. Fair enough. And what I try to do in the books, as it goes on, you'll see that I try to speak from my experience. I can't speak for what someone else is saying. What I can say is, you know, I'm 54 right now. I've never had a positive alien experience. Okay. What I've had is crosses, and in the book, I classify aliens, others, and demons even, entities even. So they're all grouped together. What I'm talking about is a very deep, long-term, current age, military, intelligence, corporate, now I think it's corporate, technological group who is doing all kinds of genetic, synthetic biology, nanotechnology, hybridization, cybernetics, underground. Yet there is no, to me, there is no cutoff between what I call entity, and I'm talking, it's either interdimensional or intradimensional, something along those lines, come and go. They're not, in my opinion, the ones I experienced are not from some star system in a ship somewhere. We're talking about eons old entities, and they're involved directly in bringing us to this technological stage, and they're directly involved in every frequency, every piece of hardware, software. They're, in my opinion, the modern version of what may have been done ritualistically to me is now being done with frequency remotely. So they're riding. When I first started waking up, Randy, I kept, you know, screaming it from the rooftops. They're riding the technology into us.
Yeah.
So we've got the full-on, beyond imagination, is my opinion, beyond imagination, again, 50 to 100 years ahead, underground, beyond what we think we know about it, is where they're at. And this is being delivered, has been delivered through this entity interaction with all the minions, okay? And they're utilizing it. So there's a much bigger, very old agenda, but in this age, at this time, this is what it's looking like, and it's moving towards, as you know, the transhumanist issue.
Yeah, the singularity, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Emily.
So I wanted to go back just a second, something that Lisa and I had talked about. So the vision I had when she was describing herself in this hotel where the conference was happening was not the kind of underground base that we think of when we think of Dulce Base or something like that, but some sort of simple lab underneath the hotel, let's say in the basement of the hotel, where intelligence agencies and corporations could be at one of these conferences experimenting with black technologies that are a hybrid of hardware and spiritual technology, I think, and experimenting on every single one of those conference attendees that are there, and that they know that in that environment there's a lot of people who have been traumatized, who are there like Elisa looking for help, you know, on their last leg trying to find somebody who can help them because they know something is desperately wrong and they want to figure it out and they want to be better and they don't know where to look for help, or people who look like, you know, are just there because they're addicted to this information or they're open to these ideas and they might not even like it. And I'm picturing this really weird scenario, which then reminds me of something Elisa told me about, that she had written an article about a television show called Orphan Black. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you wrote about, Elisa?
You know, I'll let you go where you want to go with that. You read the review, so you.
I've actually followed this series, so I'll just say this. The first time I watched Orphan Black, I can say this, it's my show, I went, holy shit. They really pulled the stops out on this one. I mean, we've had some form of disclosure. Let's just say they need to tell us what they're doing in an entertaining way. With TV shows going back through Twin Peaks, X-Files, Lost, and
Fringe.
But this one really did go over the top in a lot of ways. So, you know, somewhere in all of that, I've got to say that the series itself, if you can read between the lines and understand the difference between theatrical license and reality, there's really a lot being poured out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, remember, though, one of the main purposes of this is not only revelation of method, but it is also, and very importantly, a medium to what it does to the consciousness of the average person is
normalization.
In other words, I'm gonna talk about my clones. Well, you know, they can dismiss it too, because that's just Hollywood stuff. You know, I saw this with the American Ultra. You know, anybody who doesn't know what MK Ultra is going to walk away with this really comic book, goofy, gory, take on what was really going on. Yeah. And there's some concepts, and I'm not going to get into specifics at this time, but as I'm watching it on a very personal level, because there's some concepts they're introducing that are I've seen before in, I don't know if you ever saw Moon with Sam Rockwell, but it was about cloning, and fabulous film, but there's concepts they're introducing and they're reintroducing them, and they're false about cloning.
Yeah.
So they're not only indoctrinating people, they're disinforming them on and over and over again, over a period of, you know, decades or more. So there's that aspect of it as well.
Yeah,
truth so, mixed with false. Well, as most. Yeah.
Also, because of the way, especially young people are today, it's almost also romancing it, making it seem like something cool or glamorous, or even just weird in the way that people like to be weird. You know. So I haven't seen this show. Now that I'm aware of it, I'm going to watch it when I'm done watching the show that I'm on now. So Elisa was telling me about this, and I knew what she was going to say, because as everybody knows who listens to the show, I spent years of my life in dance music. And when I knew what she was going to say, and she tells me, well, there's like a setup underneath the places where they're having these raids, and they're doing stuff down there. And, you know, it has come up for me before in my own experiences that I've had that very thought. And I think that there's a level of interaction even going on between things that are underground and what's going on above ground at the parties. So we won't go too far into experience,
the frequencies, frequencies and the information that's being tagged on to the techno music that's being played.
Right, because you have masking. You have the ability at that point to mask frequencies within.
So
the frequencies.
There's a mass state of consciousness, and the more people in there in it, the more powerful it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they can pump in whatever. I mean, that to me is a classic. That's like a beautiful programming site, and everybody wants to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So, like, actually, the term rave comes from this idea that you'll gather a bunch of people. And hopefully the idea is to bring people who bring a lot of energy with them, not people who are just there to suck energy. But of course, that's what happens, is people come and suck energy. But the idea of rave is that you bring people who are unique and diverse together, and they listen to music and they dance, and it creates a one-time kind of, let's call it an energy signature. Okay. So right. God, what a fertile ground that is for all sorts. I mean, that sounds like a beautiful idea if we were living in a benevolent world. Unfortunately, we're not. And so, what what can be created there by inserting people who go there with different intentions than what we think they are coming there with, but also what can be picked up and learned from that environment about how to affect that mood and that kind of energy with frequency, with tone, with color, with you know, even injecting certain, I mean, there's some parties that I go to that have a really esoteric feel. There's other parties I go to where it's like a very pansexual kind of vibe. Other parties where it's a more geometrical kind of tone, and those tend to be the ones that, you know, are more interesting to me. And then there's others where it's just like going to the fucking zoo or the circus or something, and, you know, those are the ones I struggle the most with. But it is this really, there is a lot of cool and beautiful shit there, but it is also this absolutely, it's undeniable to me, and this is hard for me to accept, but I do at this point. It is a multidimensional bath of frequency, light, tone, sound, and energy that is just what is going on here.
Right. And when you talk about what's being pulled and, you know, from the people's energy, we could go into, and we don't have to, but you and I talked about this the other day, a learning system, an AI learning system.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you imagine what an AI system that's learning and compiling infinite data on what they're picking up at that situation?
I would love to
see one of a
bunch. I would love to see the file they have on me. I imagine we're into terabyte levels here. but, you know, and so it's interesting because one of the things that's occurred to me is that, you know, what am I also a vector for? You know, a lot of the places I've lived in different places, a lot of them I've been, you know, a fixture or a main character in these scenes. And what, you know, not only what is being run on me, but what are they running on other people through me? That, you know, and that's one of the things for me that brought me to the point where I'm at, is that at a certain point I became aware of that. And it's hard to live with, you know what I mean? And it's, how do you find that balance between, because we shouldn't all just stop doing things we like doing, but people, and this is a warning, and I've given it before and I'll give it again, be aware, you know what I mean? Be paying attention to what's going on. You can't, as much as we all want to lose ourselves in the music, it's at this stage not safe to do so, you know? It's sad.
Yeah. And you were basing that, I'll just preface this or subsequently say this, that you were basing that on, in the first season of Orphan Black, I made a comment that one of the most profound scenes was when there was a rave in the Neolution Club, which is the equivalent of, in this show, transhumanism. They're all going at it in trance upstairs while there's this whole event occurring with some of the clones underneath. And to me, it was a great metaphor for our society. That's the world I come from, is the what was going on in the basement. And there's this whole world of consciousness that is oblivious and seeking carnal, you know, satisfaction.
Yeah. And I think I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I'm sure there aren't too many that are experiencing it now the way I'm experiencing it, which is completely, it's kind of crazy. So it's interesting that you wrote that article before we even discussed. I knew what you were going to say. I've been experiencing it. I would almost love, I wish I could, you know, you could be a fly on the wall at one of these things I get, and I'd be really in, you know. But yeah, I mean, the thought has occurred to me many times that there are cloning centers underneath the places where we're having parties. And in fact, I even joked, you know, a friend of mine who is one of my favorite people in the dance scene here, there was a weekend where there were several parties she wanted to go to. And so she jokingly said, I wish I had clones so I could go to all of them. And I, not jokingly, responded and told her so, that there already are, but then jokingly said, well, maybe our sets of clones can meet up and each one can go to a different party and then you and I can go to all the parties and observe. You know, and she understood what I was talking about because she's well-researched and whatnot. Christina, that story's for you. But, you know, so I was joking but not joking, and I'm sure most people who read that on a thread thought we were just kidding, but she and I both knew we weren't. You know what I mean? And that's a funny space to be in.
Well, and, you know, I want to add in, let's pull back in the first hour, because in my opinion, what are we talking about holographically? This is a whole new form of cloning, or not new, but it's a different avenue of cloning.
Yeah.
We've got the, in my case, I was aware in 1989 of actual grown bodies, okay?
Yeah.
Four in addition to the original me. They came online inside of the year of 1989. So in other words, they were brought in over the course of a year, grown, whatever it is they do, and then brought online. That was a physical growing of bodies, whatever that process is. What I'm wondering now with the article, and this is kind of where I wanted to go with it, is this is another type of clone.
Yeah.
This is a different technological clone, and this is just one of maybe many ways that we're not even aware of. But so in other words, you can use people while they're laying in their bed sleeping. Nobody's missing. Most people probably wouldn't even be aware. There's no missing time. So you're pulling somebody. Who's to say they can't send you out, like with me, sending me into that room to have a purpose? The one case was them attempting reprogramming and getting me to really to go into despair is what I felt in the most recent one. But the other one was they were using me to traumatize a whole room full of kids. So who's to say what they can do with these forms?
So what we
can
have
they
now. Go ahead, sorry.
Send you out into, let's say you've got kill programming. What's to stop you if they can attach electrodes to Deva's head in her holographic form? If I can interact with these people and physically feel, what's on my head and so forth, who's to say that you can't be sending these things
out
anywhere, everywhere?
Yeah.
People could be having sex. You could be sending them out to spy. All kinds of things.
This brings up a couple of things. So we're dealing now with, trauma-based, ritualized, multidimensional, holographic abuse. Okay?
Yeah.
So it spins it off into this other, I'm having visuals that I can't even explain to you. But can the hologram kill somebody, a real person?
I don't know. That's a question.
The first thing that popped in my mind, have you seen these new, you probably don't watch TV, but maybe you can, I'll see if I can find a copy and send it to you. There's these Sleep Number commercials and this new one that has a woman getting out of bed and then
I saw that too.
Behind her, from walking around, following her throughout the day. These Sleep Number commercials have so many weird revelations in them. They have one with these weird cat people and whatnot, but this latest one literally has eight bodies of different, slightly different density walking around behind the woman. So that almost leads
right.
Are we looking at the four clone bodies you're talking about and then four clones for each of those bodies and exponentially, oh my God. You know what I mean?
Right. And when we're talking about this being done on a technological level that is, we're talking about hardware and we're talking about, as Randy brought in, we're talking about the spirit soul connection.
Yeah.
We're talking about, to me, what we're talking about is they're hacking people. That's the only way I know how to describe it. And when I first heard the word etheric body, I knew immediately, and I can't prove this, I have no inside information on this, but I knew immediately because I knew it wasn't astral. It's not astral body. I don't know why I know that. And as soon as I heard etheric body and what that is, which it holds all the information of our form.
Absolutely.
If you hack the etheric body, which is holding all the information, what says you can't create?
That's good. You just defined it right there.
And just some confirmation for you. I'm sorry, Randy, did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say this goes back into the information field again, the human information field.
Yeah.
This is actually beyond genetics if you think about it.
This is, I understand what you're saying because I feel when I first heard the term etheric body, which has been a while ago, I don't think that's anything to do with the astral body. But some confirmation for you, that energy healer I told you about, when he does work on people, he works in the etheric body. So if he's able to repair things and heal things in the etheric body, then they're also able to do it the other way.
Right.
So there's some confirmation for you. Wow. This is, that's like dizzying, just this concept.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, so we're you know, again, I can't prove, you know, naturally I can't prove. It's not, we don't live in a time where we can. I mean, how are you going to prove this stuff? I mean, our hardware above ground doesn't even tap into the levels that they're using. So, you know, you go somewhere and you try to find out what's going on. I mean, they use the oscilloscope and they can at least figure out that there's these EM fields coming in, and yeah, they're serious, they're major. But that's the kind of stuff we're dealing with, because we're talking on, you know, a nanoscale. We're talking about dealing with an esoteric science. And so it's beyond, I really think that they're working with things that we can define, but they're working beyond that.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that. I'm so glad you brought that up. When I joined Randy on this show, we decided that we were going to delve into that area of talking about things that you can't prove, because the people who are designing these, the people and the non-people, the entities, beings, whatever, that are designing these machines, they're just trying everything. They don't have to have proof something's going to work to try it. They just try shit and crazy stuff, and they find certain things that work, and then they just implement them and enhance them and augment them. And so if we're ever going to have any understanding of what's really going on, we can't only apply things that we have hard, empirical, you know, earth-based proof for. We have to be able to, you know, suppose and use our imagination and use our own personal experiences to go, you know what, that's enough evidence for me to know something's going on here. So thank you for that.
Right, right. And we don't have to have all the answers and know all of it. And it doesn't mean we should, you know, I mean, use your discernment, use your mind, use your mind and spirit to discern. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. Don't be afraid to say that something I thought I knew isn't true. I've had to do that 1,000 times over. And don't be afraid to say, I mean, I've had that experience over and over again, that I can't go there personally. I just can't do it. And it would take me months, sometimes over a year, before I could really face it and allow it to accept it, because there's a, you know, it's a heavy emotional and mental burden, because it feels, when you accept that degree, it feels like there's no way out. But I've found over the years that every time I've accepted a truth, that on the other side of it, other doors open up that never would have been open to me, meaning even in my mind and my understanding, unless I accepted that level. Then I could begin to see with a different set of eyes, you know, slightly adjusted vision now. So know that that process, that fear and that me wanting to hold it at arm's length, particularly about the clones, that was just, it devastated me for a very long time. And I felt like, well, now I never get out. How do I get out when, you know, there's a clone out there doing things that is directly, I mean, you want to talk about the connection between twins, try the connection between clones.
Yeah.
You're the same thing, and there's a part of, and I will state this, I stated it in the book, I couldn't explain how they do it, but this Deva article is in part explaining it for me. But I claimed that at the time of my clones going online, they had captured somehow the energy of my soul, and it was split into the five bodies. So part of my deprogramming has to be regaining, you know, that energy back. So that added a whole new level to the altars for me. You know, just regaining the altars, now I had to regain whatever spirit soul energy is being utilized to impart, my understanding was to impart run these clones.
Wow.
But I don't understand it. I really don't. That's all I've got. And that's presented to me by certain altar parts that were present, you know,
well,
for these transitions. So
that's a lot. That's profound, and I haven't heard anyone speak of that way before. Wow.
And so I don't, you know, there's just so many unknowns, but as a friend of mine says, a good friend of mine says, you know, it's not about looking to the PhDs anymore. It's about the everyday person, and we've got to pull together and you know, present our piece and see what fits and what's going on across the board and what resonates and so forth. So
we're getting to the end here. I wanted to, Randy, did you have anything else you wanted to say? And then I wanted to ask her for a final comment.
No, keep going. We've got about 8 minutes here.
Okay, we have time. Okay, cool. Before we come to the end, Elisa, is there anything else you wanted to talk about, that you wanted to, messages you wanted to leave with everybody? Or maybe,
The thing that always comes back, this is not, believe it or not, this is everything we've talked about. This is going to sound so cliche and trite, but this is not a hopeless situation. I'm not hopeless. I take really good care of myself to maintain functionality so that I can do my work, which is this. This is the real work. And the way I see it is that due to personal experience, the other side of my personal experience in recent years is a very, very deep and profound connection now, conscious, daily connection. It's always with me, with that, what I call, I choose to call it, the true living Christ. I'm not talking about church or Jesus or any of that. That doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a connection that was consciously made in a very dire situation in recent years to this living energy that assists me and lives with me all the time. And so my view of the physical is that we're on we've crossed the threshold. We're on a course for this time, in this age, for the human species and the earth itself.
Yeah.
And in both of those that are inextricably linked, it's the spirit that is in the fight for sovereignty. The earth spirit in its fight, it's being transformed physically just as the human species is being transformed physically. But the human spirit can still be sovereign if you make that connection consciously and live it every day, day in, day out. So I'm become an observer. I now observe, and I have all kinds of things going on remotely now. And I just, there's no fear. I observe it, I record it, I share what needs sharing, and I continue on. And I believe that down the road, way down the road, that humanity is going to have the ability to wake up and choose to take this back. But we're on a physical course in the world that I do not personally, it's just my opinion, isn't going to be halted at this time. It's going to be, you're going to have to ride it out, generations. And that threshold was crossed, in my opinion, in 2012. That's what I noticed in 2012 was now it's all in our face.
Yeah, so that was great. So I just wanted to, before we go, I wanted to share a quote from the back of Elisa's book. And it says, "We need not fear transhumanism's arrival in the future. Stealthy and coldly technical by nature is already here. If the intellect persists in viewing all that seems surreal as false or made up, then humanity will not have a prayer of extracting itself from the impending species takeover. It is time to become conscious of the reality of what has so far been relegated to myth and the subconscious." And Elisa, I wanted to say thank you so much for being here tonight. But more than that, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I think you're a beautiful person and you're very inspirational to me. And I wanted to leave us with a track as a tribute to you by the same artist, Alter Ego. And the track is called Transformer. And thank you very much for being with us.
Guys, thank you. Thanks for having me on, Emily and Randy. Appreciate it.
Channel one. Okay.
Yeah, just one final word. Your work is amazing. This, I hope, will not be the last conversation. I hope it opens up a dialogue and a conversation we can continue, Elisa, because this is not information just for the woo-woo crowd out there, by the way. I understand this is difficult information. Everybody needs to hear this. This is not just about MK Ultra survivors, abductees, or people who have had paranormal experiences. That's the testing lab for humanity. So the more you know, the better prepared you are, and we together can begin to turn this thing around and change the world and change our lives into something better. that's going to wrap it up for this time. Check the website, offplanetradio.com, YouTube channel, all those other outlets, and we'll be back when we're ready to come back. Truth is out there. It's inside you. Good night.
Stand in line, Lisa.
Okay.
Are we off?